Okay, I'm going to preface my remarks by a confession. I am a dinosaur. I know this in three different ways, two of which are related to what we're going to be talking about today. The first was a very happy recognition that I came upon last week when, like many of us, we scan the list of people who have won Guggenheims and see whom we know and who we wish we'd been. And I saw the name of someone who had been one of my undergraduates. And I thought, I can't be that old that someone who was an undergraduate is now sufficiently distinguished to win a Guggenheim. But I am. I'm very pleased for him. I'm very sad that I'm that old. The second obvious point of my dinosaurishness is that I don't have a PowerPoint. So we'll just talk. I do have an outline. I brought the, I'm halfway there. I do have a handout, so if anyone's interested in an extended bibliography of titles that might be useful in teaching, you're welcome to pick that up. The third point is that for many years I've been asking myself, how does someone like me, and I think like many of us, who were trained as historians of France, historians of a nation state, how do we adapt ourselves? How do we evolve beyond the dinosaur stage to teach in an environment that is emphasizing more and more the importance of transnational history? And how do we make French history transnational? So that's a question that I've been mulling over for some time. And it occurred to me in the process of the work that I'm doing on my current book, which will be published maybe in about 90 years, that the First World War makes France this essential transnational space, right? Maybe we can think of France between 1914 and 1919 as the hexagon inscribed with the globe. Because France becomes, in ways that Britain does too, but France even more dramatically, France becomes the site of convergence for soldiers, for workers, ultimately in 1919, for diplomats. And two questions, I think, can then help us reconstruct the way we teach France and the Great War from a transnational perspective. And those two questions have been addressed happily by some very, very distinguished, accomplished scholars who we can tap into their expertise. But it also prompts questions that will help us to guide our own undergraduate students in the kinds of questions and research projects that they might want to undertake. One way of thinking about France as this transnational space is to think about the way in which the French themselves come to interact with, experience, accommodate, or resist the plethora of foreigners who emerge on their space. And there are, I think, three different ways of sort of breaking that experience down. The first, and Bruno has alluded to this, is, of course, part of France was occupied. And so there is an experience, and there's now a very rich historiography, of the ways in which the experience of occupation, which many of us have always associated primarily with World War II, makes sense and becomes an important historiographical problem to address for World War I. The second way of thinking about how the French come to experience, accommodate, perhaps resist the foreigners in their midst is to understand the importance of empire, and particularly the rich resources that France, but also Britain, tapped into in order to make this military experience genuinely a world war. And we're very fortunate to have the works of people like Tyler Stovall and Richard Fogarty, who have analyzed brilliantly the tensions that emerge in France as colonial troops, colonial workers come to France and intersect not just with military authorities, but also with civilians, and the ways in which people think about and interact with this very, very at that point, unusual multicultural, multilinguistic community. And then, of course, the third aspect of thinking about France as this transnational space is that it becomes the temporary home of a lot of Anglophones. It becomes a temporary home of British soldiers, of Australians and New Zealanders, of Canadians, and then, dare I say this very briefly, Americans. And this, I think, is one of the ways in which we can not only tap into the existing secondary literature, but we can prompt our own students to do their own research, because, of course, the experiences of Anglophones in France are usually transmitted in English. And that, of course, will help them, you know, bridge that sometimes daunting gap of, well, I'd love to study France, but I can't read French. So this is one way of thinking about helping them to do that. So I think there, as we might want to think about how we would teach World War I, and particularly the French experience of World War I, from a transnational perspective, I think I'd like us to sort of separate out that particular pedagogical challenge in two ways. The first would be, how can we, who are perhaps not transnational historians ourselves, how can we take advantage of the scholarship that others have done? So how can we rewrite our own lecture notes, our own syllabi, to take the experience of France during the Great War and make it transnational? And that's where the handout that Sarah, I guess, has been, it's gone. And actually, I'll take a second here to advance a third way or fourth way in which I'm a dinosaur. When I was making copies of it, I thought I was using this really fancy multicolor copier so that the links to the various websites would show up. I realized only after I'd made all the copies that the links didn't show up, because they didn't. So I then reprinted them. So the copies that have circulated actually do have the links on them. If there aren't enough copies, I've got some of the bad copies, and at least they have the titles of the books. But I didn't want to just chuck them in the recycle bin. So I think we have a very rich basis of scholarly expertise that we can tap into. We don't have to become ourselves the scholars of the occupation. We don't have to become ourselves the scholars of the empire, or the scholars of the sort of the Anglophone experience of the Great War in France. We can use the brilliant insights of Annette Becker, who really, I think, established this as a way of thinking about and reimagining the character of World War I in France. But I was also struck, very moved, in fact, by a book, was one of Annette's graduate students, Manon Pignon, who wrote about children. And her work really, I think, dovetails with many of the things that Bruno has just talked about, and that is how we can understand the war by really going beyond the soldier, and going beyond sort of the experience of the front lines. But what Manon does is really quite brilliant. She examines the way in which children experience the war in various parts of France. There are some extraordinary paintings that school children did that sort of show the way in which they internalize the war by looking at disabled soldiers, for example. But what I want to emphasize here is what Manon does for understanding the way in which French children experienced occupation. And both the ways in which they resisted but also accommodated themselves to that particular experience. So we as scholars, particularly because we can read French, can tap into this very rich historiographical tradition to understand that when we think about France during the Great War, we need to think at least in part about the way in which the French were forced to interact with the German occupation, and both the tensions and the accommodations that are built into that experience. When we think about France as this site of convergence for colonial troops, colonial workers, I'm you know, bear in mind, I think, the brilliant observation that Richard Fogarty makes, that the experience of integrating colonial, particularly West African troops, into the French army places enormous stress and tension on the concept of republican egalitarianism. So the very values of the republic that nominally are being fought for, you know, the culture of the war is to defend the principles of the republic. How do you do that when you are integrating people whom the French military authorities, at least, believed to be inherently inferior and not worthy of the same rights and respect that was being that were being defended for French soldiers themselves? But I think there's also interesting work about the intersection, and of course we have to think about Lou's work for World War II, about the way in which colonial workers, colonial soldiers, and after 1917, African-American soldiers intersect with civilians. And I think there's probably, you know, you could throw out an interesting research project for your students, just based on the secondary literature, say, you know, how do French perceptions of race affect the way in which French civilians think about troops from West Africa, troops from the United States, and are there similarities, are there tensions that you can explore there? I've also discovered in work that I've just been doing very recently that there is, I think, an almost unexplored facet of how we can think about this transnational character of France during the war. And that is the extraordinary richness and intellectual innovation that emerges in a community that I think has been understudied for the war, and that is the medical community. Medical doctors from France, from the United States, from Britain, from Canada, from Australia, all converge on France. And some of them are situated 50, 60 miles behind the line. Some of them are situated 2 or 3 miles behind the line, and they rotate through. So it's not as if you're a doctor, you stay in only one place. And they rotate through, they move up to the front, they move back to the base hospitals, because they are participating in an amazing conversation of medical innovation and expertise. And they tap into new ideas from French medical experts, from British medical experts. Interestingly, and this is where I'll fly the Canadian flag for a second, they also, the Canadian doctors go to France in 1915. Many of them had trained in the United States. Many of them had very direct, close personal connections with some of the most prominent medical innovators at places like Harvard, Johns Hopkins, and they bring new insights into the practice of medicine that have been pioneered in the United States. They bring it to the Western Front 2 years before the Americans become participants in the war itself. So Canadian doctors are sort of like vectors. They take the knowledge and the expertise and the innovation that they are familiar with from the United States, and they take it to Britain, because of course they're fighting under British authority. And the British doctors say, you want to do what? You want to put blood into somebody's veins? This will kill them. And the Canadian doctors say, well, actually, we have a pretty good track record of using blood transfusion, and we can use it effectively. It might save many, many soldiers. And so there is an extraordinary community that is very explicitly transnational. And French doctors will go and give seminars to British and Canadian doctors. American doctors who are in France from the beginning of the war lend their expertise. And one of the reasons I stress this is because I think it opens up an unexpected topic of research that would be open to our students. Because as the handout suggests, there is an extraordinary website called PubMed, where the National Institutes of Health have put online almost every medical scholarly journal, certainly from the beginning of the 20th century onwards. And in my own work that I was just working on, I would put in the name of a Canadian doctor who I know was working on shock, and discovered that there were three articles that he had published in 1916, 1970. So you can sort of trace the history of medical innovation sitting, yeah, I will confess, I do use a computer sometimes, sitting at your computer and just downloading these amazing articles. So my final point then is to ask us how we can prompt our undergraduates, particularly our undergraduates who do not read French, to explore the transnational identity of France during the war. And once again, I'll reiterate one of Bruno's points. We can do it by sending them to these amazing websites. There's one that is listed on the outline, Canadian Letters, Images and Letters Project or something. And there are literally hundreds of private collections. Sometimes it's only two or three letters. Sometimes it's an entire diary for the span of the war. And with a little patience, you can scroll through and you can identify these soldiers and you can ask yourself, how did this community of Canadian soldiers, how did they experience France? What did France mean to them? Because of course there's always this recurrent phrase, somewhere in France. What does that really mean? And what it means actually, and this is a point that I made last year in Montreal, is it means three different things. It means the war, it means interactions with civilians immediately behind the lines, and it means Paris. So I'll leave it on that point.